friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the September 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. My opening serve on Monday's show is U.S. Open Tennis. Daniil Medvedev of Russia and Emma Raducanu of Britain are the 2021 men's and women's singles champions. First, Medvedev. In winning his first major title in New York, the tall, lanky Russian denied Serbian star Novak Djokovic a record 21st Grand Slam trophy, as well as a calendar year Grand Slam sweep of the four top tournaments. The AP's Graham Agars reports.
The Grand Slam dream of Novak Djokovic has turned to a nightmare after a straight sets loss in the US Open men's final. A lackluster Djokovic struggled from the very first game against the second seed Daniil Medvedev and saw his hopes of a record 21st major win and a calendar year slam taken away as the Russian powered to a 6-4, 6-4, 6-4 victory that took 2 hours and 15 minutes.
I do feel sorry for Novak because I cannot imagine what he feels. I don't know this feeling. But it definitely makes it sweeter.
The wear and tear of one five-setter and four four-set matches on the way to the final obviously took its toll on the 34-year-old Serb.
Part of me is very sad. It's a tough one to swallow this loss. I mean, considering everything that was on the line.
It was Medvedev's first major win.
A lot of happiness because that's my first Grand Slam. I don't know how I'm going to feel if I win a second one or third one, but that's my first one, so I'm really happy. Means a lot to me.
Meanwhile, British teenager Emma Raducanu also won her first Grand Slam trophy in New York. Once again, here's Graham Agars.
The 18-year-old became the first qualifier in Grand Slam tennis to win any major title, and she did it without dropping a single set in either qualifying or the main draw.
What I did very well this tournament was press in the moments that I really needed to, and I guess that's why I didn't drop a set on paper, even though all of the matches were extremely challenging. From pretty early on, I would say, I've always dreamed of winning a Grand Slam. You know, you just say these things. You say I want to win a Grand Slam, but to have the belief I did in actually executing and winning a Grand Slam, I can't believe it.
Raducanu finally stopped a giant killing run of 19-year-old Canadian Leila Fernandez, closing out the 1 hour and 51-minute match 6-4, 6-3. Raducanu had to take a medical timeout halfway through the final game to have a wound treated after slipping during a point, but rallied to be the first British winner in New York since Virginia Wade in 1968. I'm Graham Agar.
Thanks, Graham. Despite the loss, Canadian teenager Leila Fernandez says she's pleased with her overall performance in New York.
I'm very happy with myself, with the way I competed and the way I played and the way I acted on court the past 2 weeks. I've improved a lot, not only tennis-wise, but also emotionally and mentally. So I'm happy, and next year, hopefully, it'll be just as good.
In English Premier League football, it was a big weekend for Egyptian striker Mohamed Salah and Portuguese superstar Cristiano Ronaldo. Salah scored his 100th Premier League goal in Liverpool's 3-0 road victory against Leeds United. Ronaldo, meanwhile, scored twice for Manchester United in a triumphant return to the club after 12 years. Man U beat visiting Newcastle 4-1, much to the delight of these fans at Old Trafford.
Viva Ronaldo! The boy is back! Get your scarf, game scarf, match day scarf.
Viva Ronaldo!
Viva Ronaldo!
Viva Ronaldo!
The year I was born, that's the year he signed for United. We've been waiting all our lives to see this live.
Viva Ronaldo!
Viva Ronaldo!
Come on! Come on!
Yeah!
Viva Ronaldo!
You look at the fans, look all around us, the buzz is back, United are back, and Ronaldo just enhanced that, won't he? He's just, this is literally a childhood dream for me. I never thought I'd even see Ronaldo, let alone in a United shirt. This is literally a dream, I can't believe it. He's just going to... The buzz, everyone here... Mate, the queue for the megastore to buy Ronaldo top. Everyone wants one. Everyone wants to see him. We're here. He's back.
Yeah.
United are back. Simple as that, isn't it?
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
I think, personally, it doesn't quite feel real yet. Even though I got the shirt and obviously you see everything that he's back. But I'm just... I'm shaking. I'm so excited. You know, I never thought it would happen. I dreamed every summer, but... I never thought it would happen.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I couldn't think anything else better at the minute. It was unreal.
It was one of the best matches I've ever come here to see. Before this, I had a streak where United just weren't winning every time I came to a match. That's one of the best matches I've ever seen United play.
You've been listening to Manchester United football fans who sound pretty excited about the return of Portuguese superstar Cristiano Ronaldo. Meanwhile, for reaction to Egypt and Liverpool star Mohamed Salah scoring his 100th Premier League goal, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with African football analyst Emmanuel Okara.
By scoring his 100th Premier League goal, Mohamed Salah has joined the pantheon of football greats to have hit that epochal landmark. He did this in his 162nd appearance in the English Premier League. Mind you, Mohamed Salah had played for Chelsea in his initial spell in the English Premier League, scored only one goal, then went to Italy, then came back to Liverpool in 2017. A rejuvenated player, and since then he has not looked back. And by so doing, he became the fifth fastest player to have hit the 100-goal landmark behind Alan Shearer, Harry Kane, Sergio Aguero, and Thierry Henry. And also, he is also the second African player to have hit that landmark of 100 goals. Didier Drogba had scored 104. And I believe it's a very remarkable achievement for him, for an African player to hit that landmark.
What's the significance of Salah's feat to African players in the English Premier League and aspiring players in the continent?
For other African players who are playing their trade in the EPL, the onus is on them to up the ante, so to speak, for them to also emulate what Mohamed Salah has done for his career, for Liverpool Football Club, and for upcoming players like those who are applying their trade in the EPL, like I said earlier on. So the ball is in their court to do so.
Can you tell Sunnyside of Sports listeners if Mohamed Salah has the potential to surpass the 104 goals scored by Chelsea and Cote d'Ivoire forward Didier Drogba?
The way he's going, he will definitely surpass that 104 goals landmark that Didier Drogba had already made during his illustrious career with Chelsea Football Club. He has done well, and from the way things are going, there's if I put it this way, a rat race right now as to who will be the highest goal scorer in the EPL, because Cristiano Ronaldo has joined the fray. Romelu Lukaku has also, dropped his hat in the ring, so to speak. Lukaku, Belgian, though of African descent. So it's going to be an interesting race this season. And Mohamed Salah looks poised, eminently poised. And besides, in the last two or three seasons, he has won the Golden Boot. Once he did it alone, then the other times in conjunction with Sadio Mane and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. And the way it is, the sky is the limit for him, and he's in a good team. And the way Liverpool is right now, I think they are trying to make up for lost ground. It was so unfortunate that Harvey Elliott, the up-and-coming youngster, got terribly injured. I wish him a speedy recovery. And it's good to have the fans back in the field. I'm sure the Salah hitting the 100-goal landmark is something that the Liverpool fans will savor for a long time to come. The way it is, it's just we are set for sumptuous football this season. Mark you, this is English Premier League. There are other leagues across the world, but whether we like it or not, for value for your money, for entertainment, for drama, for intrigue, it's the EPL. The best coaches are applying their trade there. Some of the best players in the world are also applying their trade there. All the monies in the game is there. In terms of spending, it's the EPL. EPL is the place to be. EPL is the league to watch, the league matches to watch. It's like watching a movie. Every weekend, there's always a talking point. Either an injury or VAR or the referee missed a call or managers quarreling by the sideline or fans taking the law into their hands. Name it, it's all there. That's the English Premier League for you. Once again, congratulations to Mohamed Salah. The sky's the limit for him. He will go places. He looks poised, definitely, to surpass what Didier Drogba has done. And he will be a marker for other African players to also emulate.
That's African football analyst Emmanuel Okara. And Emmanuel spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Lagos, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Olise, former captain and coach of the Super Eagles of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Sunday. A 14-year-old swimmer from Uganda did not win any medals at the recent Paralympics in Japan, but she definitely made a historic splash. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Magume Davis Rakawinj reports from Kampala, Uganda.
Husna Kukundakwe, Uganda's Paralympic swimmer, says she's living her dream. The 14-year-old made history when she competed in the women's 100 meters breaststroke swimming race, where she finished sixth with a personal best of 1 minute 34.35 seconds, slashing her earlier record of 1 minute 36.31 seconds. At 14 years, Husna is the youngest competitor at the Tokyo Paralympics Games and the first Ugandan paraswimmer at the Games. She told reporters after the race that participating at the Games boosted her confidence and that the journey for her success had just begun.
I feel like I could even touch the clouds because just I'm the youngest here, and just seeing how the others are doing and just swimming with them is kind of the start of my journey, and I'm just really excited to see how far I'll go.
Husna was born with no right lower arm and a slightly deformed left hand. She says growing up, she was at times discriminated against. She says she hopes participation at the Games will help change the attitudes and perceptions the society has on persons living with disabilities.
Most parents who give birth to children with disabilities just abandon them, and sometimes they end up on the streets, like they become beggars. And just maybe if they watch the Paralympics, when they're watching the Paralympics, they will realize that the choice they made was really bad, and they should have rather supported their children to achieve the dreams that they've wanted to do. And even sports alone can help raise your confidence. And just maybe giving these kids a chance, when they see that they're different from other people and they realize that they want to do something, sport can help them raise their confidence, and maybe in the future they will just do whatever they want to do.
But it was always a bumpy road, Husna says. At times, she almost gave up and decided to try out other games like football and basketball.
To be honest, I've faced a lot of discrimination in Uganda as a person with a disability, but I didn't really care much about those, but it really hurt the most when I was at a swimming gala and I didn't get a chance to swim a race that I really wanted to do, and that made me feel like I wasn't appreciated in society. That made me feel really different, and after that experience, I stopped swimming for a while, and I had to pick my confidence back up to go back for swimming.
Husna's parents are her number one fans. Her mother, Hashima Batamuriza, accompanied her to the Paralympics village and says she's equally excited seeing her daughter compete at the world stage.
I feel so proud that we as parents have managed to bring up a child of useful, a child who is useful to the community and to the whole world. Husna is here not only doing swimming, but she has been involved in very many other activities that really make me proud as a parent and as someone who is on ground. She participated in the main press conference for the Paralympic Games, and she performed very well, of course, as a mother, as a parent, I just get proud and feel like I have really done enough to develop her to what she is today.
And she has a message for other parents raising children with disabilities.
Yeah, of course, as any other child growing up with a disability, person has faced very many challenges. But when a person with a disability faces discrimination in society, really brings them down. But as a parent, I tried very hard to see that Husna does not suffer that much discrimination, because I kept encouraging her, I kept talking to her, and not only me, but of course the dad, the family, we kept on talking to her, encouraging her, motivating her, and of course when she started swimming, we became her number one fans and her number one supporters.
And Husna says,
it was just really amazing. I feel really happy, and it shows me how I'm progressing. Seeing how I'm progressing wants me to progress more and just keep moving until I get to the point where I can actually get a medal.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarenji in Kampala, Uganda.
Thanks, Mugume.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Still with the recent Paralympics, Prince Nesta spoke with a Kenyan woman who played a key role with Team Ghana in Japan.
So my name is Sheila Cleo. Well, I play different roles in the Paralympics. First of all, I'm a consultant for the International Paralympic Committee for the Parasport Against Stigma Project in Ghana, Malawi, and Zambia. But specifically for the Paralympic Games, I was there as the Paralympic attaché for the Ghana team, basically overlooking and also doubling as a COVID liaison officer. So I pretty much was overlooking all COVID protocol that the teams had to follow, Ghana team had to follow, and all other general operations of the team regards to participation and their involvement in the Games Village and the overall Tokyo Games.
And talking about that, how different was this from other Paralympics?
Well, first of all, I think we need to appreciate the current times that we live in, definitely. Tokyo 2020, first of all, was postponed by a year. And then came the reality of, even after the postponement, we were still experiencing what was second and third wave of this COVID pandemic. So with the time delays, also with the fact that it was happening during a difficult time in what is will be history later, you know, but current affairs, it was very different. Regulation-wise, there had to be strict protocol to be followed. And so definitely have to commend the local organizing committee, Tokyo 2020, for pulling it through despite everything that took place. I mean, under all the uncertainties, will it happen, will it not? Political pressure, you know, of the people, some saying don't host it. So definitely different from the other games, but in no way did they underperform despite the challenges. I think they did an amazing job.
I really must commend the Paralympics Organization Committee for doing such an incredible job. What was the general mood in terms of spectatorship?
First of all, I have to say that so for the Tokyo 2020 Games, we did not have spectators. So the people in the stands were definitely the stakeholders who were part of the Games, whether it's coaches, the Paralympic family, you know, the volunteers from the Tokyo 2020 team and athletes, you know, other athletes. So, but still, we did not miss out on the experience, you know. I mean, it would have been great with more people, but I have to say how the Tokyo 2020 team conducted the games is something that the world should learn from. It did not take away the excitement despite all the protocol and even just daily testing of all stakeholders involved at the games. We had daily testing taken on. Any cases that were reported, there was immediate isolation and action was taken. We had less than 20 cases that even popped up, and only one that was hospitalized. You know, the confidentiality that the Tokyo team handled some of these things without you know, without creating that fear among people. It was a superb coordination. I mean, daily testing, which having an officer to do it, having a clinic that operates, having a COVID unit for any isolation cases, controlling the spectator, allowing people to view. I have to tell you, this was the first time that the Paralympic Games was aired in up to 46 African countries, and it was free to air content every day for an hour. And this meant that, yes, you cannot travel, you cannot be here, but they made it available through TV, through our social media. I have to commend Paralympic social media platform, kept any follower entertained, you know. It was, they found a way through media, you know, and I keep telling people media is powerful. Through media, they found a way to ensure that the people did not miss out while we still observe what is the reality of COVID. So yes, no spectators, but still, every time I stepped out from the Paralympic Village and the different events, although there was a barricade, there were fans. Japanese came out on the streets with social distancing and supported. I mean, it was amazing. Them just appreciating a bus going to an event, and it was amazing.
What were some of your favorite moments, Sheila?
Oh, the Paralympics is always an amazing. I keep telling people and my friends, yeah. The Paralympics offer more than sports. We had a situation where the guide of a runner, of one of the visually impaired runner, proposed after a race. You know, we had the youngest Paralympian, Husna Kukundakwe from Uganda, who really like just put Africa on the map. Very, very confident individual who really like represented Africa in a different way. We had the likes of Ntando, South Africa, who just set a whole, you know, record in the long jump and even in his race. There are so many moments in the games that just take you away. I mean, the performance at the opening ceremony, the closing ceremony, having a performance that actually had persons with disability putting up a performance. And this is part of the things that change perception. I mean, I could go on and on about favorite moments. And then they launched what is the biggest campaign right now, We the 15.
Yeah.
Is a campaign because the global population of persons with disability is 15%. And that is 1.2 billion people, Prince, that we cannot ignore.
Yes.
That is a population of 1.2 billion people. And persons with disability make up for 15% of the global population. And so the We 15 campaign was launched. If you just look it up, you'll see about it. And it's just, you know, eradicating these barriers. It is perhaps, this will be the biggest movement on disability rights awareness. And in less than 2 weeks, the following of that movement and the people who have signed up to it, you know, having the likes of Prince Harry speak about it, it is amazing, you know. And this is my question to African leadership. How do we get on board this? We don't always have to be the last ones to the show, you know. I mean, there are so many amazing moments at the Paralympic Games that I could go on and on about.
Yes. And how do you rate the performances of African teams during the Tokyo Paralympics?
I will be honest, there were countries that the performance were lower than expected. But equally, there were countries that recorded their first. You know, we have Ethiopia having their first Paralympic gold medal. You know, we had the likes of those who... You see, most of the times in the Paralympic Games, what people need to understand, it's not really about the medals. African countries are now more represented at the Paralympic Games compared to other years. We are now having more countries even entering athletes in the first place. So for me, that's a big one for Africa. Now, when we talk about the medals, I always say this, with the challenges that the African space face, and I've worked with the African NPCs both when I was serving at the International Paralympic Committee and as a consultant. And I can openly say that with the challenges that African countries face, the performance is tremendous, to say the least. I'm looking at the likes of Team Ghana that I worked with. Of course, it's not their first time at the Paralympic Games, but it is the first time that the athlete ranked within the top seven. And we're looking at an athlete, Emmanuel Niteteoku, who has only been in the sport for 3 years, and this was his first Paralympic Games. So we had the youngest Paralympian coming from Africa, who's Nakundakwe from Uganda, who's a para swimmer. And so I think we must just also hang on to this accolades while we still navigate the challenges that we have in the para sport development in Africa.
You've mentioned that, you know, there are a couple of teams that were a bit disappointing. Honestly, in your opinion, in this regard, which countries are these?
I would say Team Kenya, we expected more. We have done more. It's not about expectation. We're talking about probability and what has been there in recent past. Team Kenya has the capacity to do more. So recording one bronze was a little disappointing. I would speak for Kenya because it was one of the biggest shockers that, you know, for most people in the Paralympic movement, they're like, we really did not expect this. We have the giants of para powerlifting Nigeria, who usually record several medals, especially, you know, in the sport of para powerlifting. But then we also have to understand we are coming from difficult times. So maybe athletes' development and training was not possible given the 1-2 years that we have been dealing with the COVID pandemic. Not to use it as an excuse, but we also have to appreciate that we are coming from a difficult, you know, time. So, I would say for me, those two countries were a bit of a shock.
Looking back, what are some of these things that you think maybe Team Kenya or Team Nigeria or any other African team can basically put in place so that they can even get more medals in the next Paralympic events?
I'm going to be honest. You see, when it comes to the games, yes, it's a 4-year plan. It's not an overnight plan. So everything that falls into that 4 years, whether it's ensuring that athletes go for qualifier competitions and government support to ensure that athletes go for qualifier. I'll give you a good example. For para powerlifting, there are competitions you must attend in the pathway to be considered for the final ranking as to whether you will attend the games. And you see, that is on every year, that's about 2 at the minimum. So that is an investment. And you have to, I mean, one thing with African countries is that we're always traveling out for qualifiers. It's always somewhere in Morocco, it's always somewhere in Europe, you know. It's always, and it's a really cost-intensive process. Forget alone the equipment that comes with para sporting disciplines that are very expensive. So, like I say, we can't really say an immediate should be done. I think we need a 4-year plan whereby athlete development is put into consideration. The necessary support, whether it's equipment or training, athlete identification and talent identification. We definitely, as Africa, need a new crop of athletes. And when I say a new crop, is because we have some of the oldest ranking athletes in the para movement. You have countries that are bringing in people in their teenage and people in their 20s. And, you know, then you have most of our athletes are like in their 30s and their 40s, which is understandable because the whole persons with disability took time before it was embraced in the African space, you know. So you can only appreciate that for these athletes to come out and still do what they do, you know. It's commendable, but we need to find a way for more talent identification and more representation. I'll just take a reflection of China. China was really doing well in the medals ranking, but you know, China almost has an athlete represented in every discipline that is there in para sporting events. So by the basis of probability, you are bound to lead the medals table.
That's Sheila Cleo, a consultant for the International Paralympic Committee for the Parasport Against Stigma Project in Ghana, Malawi, and Zambia. And she spoke with Prince Nesta in Nairobi, Kenya. We heard Sheila reflect on Team China at the Paralympics. The Chinese did indeed dominate the medals table with a total of 207 medals won. Team Great Britain was next with 104 medals. And that wraps up the September 13th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.